All right, we're back. Weekends. This is episode 18. We've got Oren, huge fan of Oren, on the pod. Dude, thank you so much for coming on. Looking forward
stoked
to this.
Stoked to be here. Yeah, happy to chat. Love all your content, and yeah, stoked to talk to the people.
Absolutely. So basically, the internet knows you as the internet's creative director, which I think is such a sick, like, self-branded title, which fits perfectly. But for people who are listening to this, before we get into like the back and forth, you want to just tee up quickly like your background, but also how you got into this kind of like content world. So I know you were doing a lot of stuff before that.
Yeah, for sure. I started my career as a designer, I guess is the easiest way, because people always ask like, where did things begin? And, you know, mostly graphic design, but a little bit of industrial interior. And then, you know, worked my way into marketing and sales, became an executive at businesses and consumer electronics. Started a engineering agency with two friends. That was about 40 people and is still going. And so kind of did the full entrepreneurial side and then became an operator inside larger businesses. So actually prior to making content, I was the president of about a 200 person company that got acquired by a public company. And I was doing everything basically, but running the finance team and the legal team. And so after that and, you know, doing something at that scale, I was definitely like, hey, I don't want to operate like that anymore. That is too much for me. I'm sure you have a similar experience from consulting and just being like, hey, maybe this isn't the right use of my time. So I was like, hey, I'm going to get back into the marketing side of things, the branding side of things, which I love, design. But I'd seen so much of the world change in terms of like what worked there and how much organic content was blowing up. And I realized that as someone who is, you know, I'm aging, I have not been in the trenches the last few years and that I need to make some content to really embrace, you know, what's happening and try to make moves smart with how that worked for brands and projects. And then I ended up opening a whole new world. Basically, I started to look at it less, okay, I'm going to be a marketing operator in my own business or anything like that. And more as this is really a tool for me to do anything that I desire. And that's been a kind of an amazing, let's say 18 months or so since then of just kind of watching all that unfold.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, like a cascade of light bulb moments, like one after another. Similar story, like was operational, tried content, knew like the meta of content is valuable. We need to build content, build audience, and that can unlock every door. And then as soon as it started working in my head, I was like, holy shit, this is way bigger than I thought. And same thing for you. I feel like a lot of people listen to this and they're like, you know, they're at the beginning and they're like, what do I do? I don't know how to start. But for you, like, what was your approach going into starting to make videos? Was it strategic or were you just like, let's just fire this, see how it goes?
And then I messed around. Yeah. And I had some like L's basically, like stuff didn't work prior to working. I just had different accounts. So first I did some videos reviewing non-alcoholic drinks because I don't drink. And just kind of like, okay, like fun little beverage reviews didn't really go off, but I was like kind of learning my footing. Then I was doing stuff specifically around consumer packaged goods. I had an account called like CPG Academy where I was like, all right, let me do some instructional there. And then where it started to work is I was like, hey, that was all just me trying to find something. And I just didn't really quite know what. And I was like, cool, I'm just going to talk about stuff I'm interested in, which is really design and kind of and like product development. And so that was much more natural. It was much more fun to create content. And then I had a kind of formative moment where I was making the videos that were pretty bad. And I had a friend from high school and she was like, hey, you need to like, she's like, you're much saucier like in real life and you should be taking advantage of that. And like, you know, like I think her like exact words were literally like, you know, look hotter, slow down, you know, talk that talk, you know, and like, yeah, I was like, oh shit. And I started doing that. Yeah. And like immediately like the next video on were like, it was like all hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, that's something I've noticed too, is like, when I watch my own stuff back, I'm like, I'm still this like performative character, mostly because when I would watch the raw stuff without adding any like extra emphasis, it seems so flat. But now I watch my stuff back and I come off like a jester almost. Like I'm like cringing at the yeah, yeah, you know, like the exact thing that people make fun of with YouTube. And I feel like you struck a really pure balance where like when you just delivered in the same exact way you talk. And I think people actually want that. And it's a skill, yeah, honestly. Yeah.
And I still feel like, I think everyone looks at themselves, especially when you're watching content, you have to reflect upon yourself a lot more. I didn't think a lot about how I spoke, how I present myself. It just was, you know, prior, right? And then now I think a lot about it. I still feel like it's 20% performative, right? And you're like, oh God, should I really be like that? You know? And so it is hard. Everyone I think has that opinion of themselves, but now I feel more than ever, it's kind of finding its groove. And that just takes time and comfort. But I mean, man, the impact it has on the rest of your life too, like how I can speak in meetings, you know, like public speaking, like any of those options. Like I'm in some of these meetings now, like with retail groups, and it's like I do sales pitches like TikTok videos. It's like, what's my hook? All right, now let's give them the background.
Yeah.
Let's hit them with three bullets. Let's impress them. Let's impress them again. You know, and then what's the CTA? It's like, it's so funny. Like my whole world thinks like that now.
Yeah, the trickle down ecosystem of like all the skills built can't be overlooked. And like, yeah, it's a really good point. I never thought about that. So one thing I wanted to ask you is, so basically like I'm fascinated by the strategic, almost like world building that comes around the content piece. So once someone gets the content working, ideally the content is like the spine and then you can build all these things off of it. Some people strategically, they go into the operation being like, okay, I want to do X, Y, and Z. I need the content to work first. So I'm going to get that going. Other people are like, the content is hard enough. Let me figure out the content. And then random things end up coming from that. I'm curious, like for you, as you started to see the initial traction, 30, 40, 50,000 followers, you were growing fast. You have like a strategic business mind, marketing mind. So like, what was the plan in terms of leveraging that? And how has that plan shifted as you've gotten bigger and like tried different things?
That's a great question. That's something, I feel like only another creator or person with your understanding could ask, which is perfect. And actually it's a really interesting answer because I got super strategic on like when I was at like 50K, because I was working part-time at this group called The Surgeon. It's like a shoe customization group, which is very much a like personality, social media leveraged craftsman studio that like has involved in a lot of different things. And I was watching myself grow and being like, and I understood the way that they had used social media powerfully. And I was immediately like, oh, I could get to the same social media or audience level, or even not the same necessarily, but like a fraction of what this looks like very quickly. And I understand they have this whole business model built around that. And so I immediately was like, okay, what's my 18-month plan? And I have basically just been knocking things off one by one to get to that 18-month plan since I kind of had that initial vision at like 50K before I even went onto Instagram. And it's like splendid how it's worked out. And honestly, almost all of it is like exactly as expected. And I'm very much like a manifestation person. Like I see it, it happens. And it's like my entire life. But this I like strategically planned. And the only thing that's come along in the interim is like, it's just been more powerful. Like I made more money than I thought. I have more attention and eyeballs than I thought. It has more impact than I thought. But yeah, it's been a super strategic plan from there to here where I was like, cool, I want to build a big enough audience based purely on value with content purely about ideas based super heavily on my personality that then whenever I want to have a business idea for the rest of my life, I'm going to be able to use this platform to kickstart it in a like super major way and validate product market fit extremely fast. And then I'm just going to do that with every idea I've ever had for the next like decade. And I'm like entering into that phase now. And it went like exactly as planned.
That's fire. And so basically like the 18 month, like first business, some manifestation of like Valuable Studios, which we'll get into, which is basically like a lifestyle brand that you own, operate and like create for. Was that kind of like, I don't know if you had the name
exactly
for it back then.
Okay, yeah, nice. I didn't have the name. And so we actually spent probably 6 months getting to concept. But I basically knew, I was like, look, I want to be able to, I'm not showcasing my skills right now. I'm just talking other people's stories. I'm not the best, but I'm a good designer. I'm a good strategist. I'm good conceptually in a number of these things. I want to be able to show that off, but I want to have the right platform to do it. I want to have a plan to do it. And then I want to be able to act on that in a way that of these people I look up to, like Samuel Ross from A Cold Wall, you know, like everyone will say Virgil, but like Virgil Abloh, like a number of these people that have Vandy the Pink. There's people who like kind of have these brands. They're sort of based around themselves, get to design and work in all these different areas. And I was like, I want to do that, exactly that. And I want to have a really concrete plan and I want to do it authentically because I don't want to build an audience and then just be like, aha, I'm selling you stuff now. My audience has always been based around providing a bunch of value. And I want to be like, how could I then have a brand and a concept that is authentic to providing value while also fulfilling, you know, me being able to design the things I want to do and collaborate with the people I want to collaborate with. And it took us about 6 months to come up with the idea, like the name Valuable and the things that connotates. And also this kind of like open source brand idea we have where like I release things and then you want the factory, like take it. Half of these things, I'll just be giving people the tech pack, like take it, run with it. Like it belongs to the internet now, which is very related to my existing content. But once we kind of had that idea and had the name, it was like, all right, now what does it take to bring it to life? Which is like another 6 to 9 months, you know?
That's fire. And when you say us, who's the core team that you're working on this like valuable brand with? Because I know you have multiple things in the hopper.
Yeah, so I have a whole team. I don't do this myself. I couldn't have the output I have and do it. And I've always been like a team person, like even at jobs and stuff, like I always had a VA. I always just employ people directly myself because it just makes me more effective as a person. So I have a combination of two full-time designers that work for me that do a whole number of things, and then some freelance designers. And then I have a management team so that handle a lot of the creator stuff from, this includes both content strategizing to, you know, brand strategizing to like my brand deals to what I do across platforms and editing and things of that nature. And then I have business partners inside all these businesses. So for instance, my newsletter, which is called Hyper, I'm partnered with another creator called Clayton Chambers. He has another newsletter called Sprezza that's really popular. So we work on that together. On Valuable, I have a partner in one of the factories I'm working with. I partner with one of the owners there on it. On the bootcamp I have, I partner with two other people. So I really like working with others. So I kind of bring that into everything I do versus like having it be all on me.
Yeah. So another thing I wanted to ask you, which this is like a fascinating thread to pull on, is there's this like accordion where people talk about, on one side you have focus, where people are like, just do one thing, compound everything around that thing. All the things you do for that thing should funnel it. And then on the other side, there's like, just follow your passion, do a million things at once, and like try to build an ecosystem, whatever. There's this like spectrum, right? I tend to want to be on the latter, which is like do a bunch of things with a bunch of people. And like, even though it's not as organized and focused and compounding, it's like way more fun. I feel like that's where you live also, basically, with all the projects. But interestingly, like what I wanted to pull on is when you started, you were like, I have this 18-month plan, and the top of funnel is make a bunch of content, give a bunch of value for free. The bottom of funnel was this like lifestyle brand that you would eventually build products for, et cetera. But along the way, you alluded to some of it right there. You tried a bunch of, like you did brand deals. You now have Hyper, which is it could be a B2B email newsletter, also like B2C people subscribe. You were part of the short form content, you know, thing with Alex and Landforce. Like there's all these different things that you're doing that aren't the brand, but that can be seen as like in that same ecosystem. So how do you like, just walk through your thinking around that? Cause I think when people look from the outside, they're like, A, how the hell is he doing all these things? Which your team is a big piece of it, but B, like why is he doing all these things?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And I think what usually surprises people is I still work full time.
Yeah.
and so that's where the team comes in, right? Like where I'm a, so yeah, I have a complex personality type and have a, there's a couple forms of ADD. One of them is the interrupting form, which I have. And I've really just noticed that like, it's really about personality types, right? And how much money you want to make. Those are, I think, the two things to really touch on. And the first is like, if you are a type A personality or a person who can pay attention to things for long periods of time and, you know, can like work through and slog through whatever it takes, you're probably better off focusing on one thing. Because that's like going to be the best direct benefit for your energy and you probably make the most money. I just don't think like that. Like I'm 25 to 45 minutes into anything, I have to shift gears, which is really good when you're operating a business where you can be like, cool, I'm going to go back and forth between, distribution. Now we're talking manufacturing. Now I'm with the marketing team. Now we're going into a sales review. Perfect. But it's also as an entrepreneur, if I was just saying, hey, all I'm focused on is my newsletter or all I'm focused on is making content, I'll lose it. Like, well, yeah. I'll lose half the day too, is because I'll just be like, that energy I have when I have to transition will go into me doing something that's not useful, or go into, I honestly, like just with my own kind of personal ups and downs, will go into me doing something self-destructive. And so I just channel 24/7 energy, if it's not with my family, into doing things that I enjoy. And then the second caveat is money. I completely agree. If you want to make the most benefit for your time, building one thing as big as you can get you that, you know, 50 million, 100 million, like you can build something amazing. I have come to the conclusion that I don't really care about that. I am completely comfortable and better at smaller wins. All of these businesses I have along the way, like Hyper is a newsletter. We'll sell Hyper for low seven figures. Cut 30 is a bootcamp. We will sell Cut 30 for low seven figures. You know, like what I'm doing with my brand, maybe we sell it someday. Maybe it's just cash flow, but I've done enough deals, sold enough and bought enough companies and worked through been in the process of those, had equity in those, that I understand that process. And I like building things with the idea that I'm not doing them forever. I'm going to sell them. And I actually feel very competent in the idea of like, I know how to prep a business, get it to a certain revenue amount, know how it's valued, find a buyer and like move on. And so everything I'm building is kind of based around that, right? Like with the newsletter, for instance, like we are building a newsletter that we will sell to a agency that needs a lead gen mechanism or a like a SaaS brand for e-com. And we are very intentional about the content we put out and the partners we work with to get there. And at the end of that, we'll go find something else interesting after it. And so I look at it all as like, I have this one funnel of all the content and all the things. I don't necessarily just need to sell one thing. I have multiple call to actions and they all work, and just like keep running them as long as you see that future that it makes a lot of money or it is sellable.
Which of the projects that you worked on, let's take like content as a project in itself, like out of it, but which of the other projects have you been most surprised by like the, like, damn, that worked fast, or like, damn, this is printing money, or like whatever the, whatever your expectation going into each project, which have you been surprised positive or negative about in a way that people would be shocked by?
Yeah, I think the creator revenue, just like brand deal revenue, is if you have the ability to communicate about SaaS and about like it, it's just shocking. Like it's more than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah.
So that's probably the most surprising.
I think what's interesting and why I wanted to talk to you is I had the same vision, and I would say the arc has not been as explosive, and I'm still like trying to figure it out on my end, but the similar idea where it's like, I really wanted to make content because A, I wanted to help people and build trust, but really I wanted to build businesses at the bottom that I could fund free CAC forever. Like that's been my plan the whole way. And I still haven't really figured out the like what's at the bottom. I'm like kicking tires on things and trying to figure it out on my own mostly. Like I don't have a full team, but what I think is helpful for people listening is if you're in the same camp as you were, I am, a lot of people are, which is like, we're trying to build this huge audience to then build business at the bottom. You are one of the best profiles to study in terms of like, you have SaaS, you have a course business, you have physicals now, you're like consulting a bunch of people. It's just fascinating, I think, to look at the magnitude of influence and how that audience ports over. Like you've already said it, so I don't know if I'm just rambling at this point, but the like, I think you tweeted 100,000 people, 100,000 person audience will change your life. It's so crazy how like much you can squeeze out of that amount. You know, it's wild.
Yeah. Well, and I think especially because we look at people's lives, like, and I've realized over the last year, I've lost a lot of perspective on what things used to be like. But for a lot of people, their life has changed by making 10K a month, right? Which is really like, you have 100,000 person audience and you have a decent consulting $1,500 a month thing, $2,000 a month thing. You are there. You no longer have to work a regular job ever for the rest of your life. And you bring those people, then you get 10% of your audience into an email list and you're selling slots on that. Like there's just so many of those ways to just fiscally change your life. But then you look at connections and all the other things that come from it. And I think really the difference between most people and where I was, and I'm just later in my career and have more intention, is like, I was really specifically like, what is that Venn diagram of what I can talk about all day and what people are interested in, and like where there is money and resources. And I think most people kind of have one of those things. Okay, I could talk about this because I can make money in it, or hey, I'm really interested in that. You know, it's like really finding that sweet spot of all three is the hardest part, because a lot of eyeballs don't translate into that same level of value. And you have to have like that personality and the value driving and the consistency. And that's really hard. But the plus side is it doesn't, you know, as I think you're probably in the middle of experiencing, you can figure it out along the way, right? You can get to one stage and maybe it takes 4 months to get to the second stage, but like at least you're at stage one. And now you can just be, hey, how am I going to move this audience or take this skill set and adapt it to what my future looks like? Like I look at content not as something I'm going to shut off in 3 years. And I also don't have the goal of being a celebrity, but I do look at it like, what is Seth Godin, or like, what did this previous generation of people that made their arc be about their personality look like? And then what does this new generation look like? And I think, you know, you and I and Ashwin and a lot of these people that we're friends with are like squarely there. And it's just a matter of where we want to put our direction, but we're going to work on it for a decade.
Yeah, exactly. That's the metaphor I use a lot is like, I have a bucket and I have a shit ton of water coming in the top of the bucket. Right now I have no bottom of the bucket. So all the water is just falling on the ground. But as soon as I figure out what to put on the bottom, I'm going to start capturing water in the bucket and like huge quantities. And so, yeah, it's like another metaphor I was thinking of lately is like, at the beginning, all you want to do is be the sushi chef. We're like, what does the sushi chef in Japan do? Every day he wakes up, goes to the fish market, picks the best fish out of the fish market. So like identifying the best idea is like the corollary. And then he comes to the shop and he just sharpens the knife as sharp as possible, has one precise cut. That's like the best rep. So all I was trying to do at the beginning is like pick the best fish, cut the best piece. And now it's like, once you train that pattern, then it's like, all right, well now you need to step back. Like, are you serving the right thing? Like, are you picking the right species of fish, whatever it is? And so the thing that I'm, what's different between me and you, which I love, I want to talk about this, is the type of content you made, you actually authentically liked, and it fit perfectly with what you could have at the bottom. So it was like, it was just a matter of time. For me, like either stupidly or just like, unfortunately, I started making a type of content that I was like good at making, but it didn't tie with what I actually wanted to do. So like, if I wanted to make a lifestyle brand and I started making stuff about tech news, there's a complete disconnect. And so now I'm trying to figure out, how do I port that over? Both like, how do I learn the thing to talk about? Because I don't know anything about brand building. So like, you're an expert in that space, which is amazing because you can make content about it, build a brand. If I want to build a brand but don't know anything about it, it's so hard mentally to be like, oh, I was getting millions of views with tech news. Now, like, I gotta go all the way back the mountain and like learn that skill to go back up. And so I don't know if you've seen, like, in the people you've worked with,
I've seen interesting thoughts on that. Yeah, because I think, you know, because look, you built a skill set. We all build skill sets with content. I also look at, like, the content I talk about is very tangential to my audience, but still different. People are coming to me for, like, creative advice, design advice. If I was selling, like, a mood boarding app, I'd probably have more product market fit, but there's enough overlap. It's all about percent overlap, right?
Yeah.
But what I think is really interesting is about niches for brands, right? Like, so for instance, with the brand I'm working on, I am very focused on at least a percent of the brand identity is wrapped up in motor vehicles, right? In about like Americana muscle cars and like truck culture and these things that are always been fascinating to me that I've participated in. And because I look at it being like, I'm creating a thing that my content will enable some of, but it's gonna have to live on its own as well. And when you create something that lives on its own that has its own subculture, you can then apply that same skill set for it. I know how to make good content about a number of things, but now I'm gonna make that good content and then anchor it around the car culture that is an intrinsic part of my brand. And what I think a lot of people do when they launch a lifestyle brand is they forget about that really specific niche, where it's like you can have your brand that looks cool, or you can have your brand that looks cool and is, you know, perfect for, you know, lacrosse players or whatever your kind of zone down is. And so I kind of very intentionally picked that other aspect too. And I find that's really good for creators that don't have perfect overlap. Like, perfect overlap is an interior design creator that launches a interiors line, right? Like,
yeah.
That's like the most straightforward, right? Food creator launches a food, you know, food product. But for anyone else, it's like more of the, okay, when what I want to create, I'm just going to apply the same skill set and I'm going to be a partial funnel for that, right? But I think there's so, I think we limit ourselves as creators thinking about our own accounts. I've been thinking about this a lot as I look at like expanding my team, in that people consume content in a few styles, right? If you like talking head content, that's only a certain percent of the population. You and I are never going to see the people that don't like talking head content, because that's like 95% of what we do,
yeah,
right? But then there's people that only watch like Zach Kravitz style content, like beautiful lifestyle reels that have some like advice on it. Their entire feed is that. So I've been thinking a lot about, cool, like, how do I take all my same concepts, completely different account, because I don't think they work on one account. And then that, and I am just leveraging into that with all my same ideas. And then take that a step further into personalities. Like, some people want to hear business advice from people that look like them. So they want to hear it from an African-American or an older woman or whatever that looks like. Some people don't. But the idea of there's other creators with the same ideas, with different demographics that speak differently or appeal differently. And they, how can they portray your vision? And so I think there's something to that too, where like, really we're becoming, getting the toolkit to become orchestrators of whatever attention that we want to get. And I think that's where the next application for both you and me, and anyone kind of like us, looks like, is like, what is that network effect? And how do we actually execute that, have enough money to do it, and have see results on the other side?
So that's a really interesting concept, because what I've tried to do is like pick many different format styles and shove them down the one pipe, which is like the Callaway account. But I think you're exactly right, which is like, people who came for the talking head tech news that love that, they don't give a shit about my lifestyle reels that are like fast cut. They don't care at all about like any cinematic approach. So that it does make sense to separate it. The con of that, or like the other side that Roberto and I were talking about, is basically with compounding, you want to funnel everything into one thing so that you can get the compounding going fast, versus if you split against five accounts, it's going to take 10 times as long to compound. But so yeah, I'm curious,
just,
how you
I
think
just
about
disagree.
That.
I disagree. After having done so much in TikTok, TikTok shop in particular. So I'm running at the brand I work with daytime. I run the multiple creator thing on TikTok and TikTok shop, where we have like six creators in different markets with different styles, all running content around, and they have small follower amounts. Like, some of the accounts blew up and have like hundreds of thousands. Some of them have like 5,000. Doesn't matter. Yeah. They have viral hits all the time. And that all runs back to kind of selling the core brand. And I truly don't think like the compounding effect as a personality, I think it's almost equal.
I guess
like
it's that, a sum, I guess, right? Yeah,
exactly. Because I think you can't reach on the singular account, the throttling you're getting by trying to do multiple content types or approaches are within a single structure of the algorithm is not going to make up for the compounding effects that a single type of content has when done successfully. And I think that, and the idea is that,
fascinating.
And I think you need to look at it like, it's like almost like the units of an army, right? Where like they're way more powerful together than if you put everything behind the cavalry. And so I think that's very much how I look at it. And again, could be wrong. We're all theoretical here, but I think that is the right approach.
Yeah. And I think it does matter too, like if you're on the video or not. So like if I started a faceless channel on Instagram, it could grow. And like what I could use is like I create the echo chamber where like I repost my personal videos and vice versa. But it wouldn't give me as much of a sum total because people wouldn't know it's me. But all of a sudden, when you start doing like Zach Kravitz style, which he's on the video, Talking Head, which he would be on the video, and then you start adding those, it really is a sum. It doesn't matter if like one channel has 500,000 because it's, you can add them all up.
And then you layer the brand on top of that. If Weekends or Valuable or Blanked or whoever has it, if all the, you start adding other creators that aren't even you on it, but like the gear is present, the motifs are present, and then it becomes a network, right? And so I do think that like that's how I'm trying to get to that stage, where I can execute on all that. It's a matter of just time and resources. But yeah. I do think that's what that future looks like. And because it's almost about infinite shots on goal. Like I look at it, like you have 100 accounts posting the same content with different ways to do it. You will have 100x the results, and versus you will just always max out on the maximum that your account will show in the algorithm.
Yeah. It's just a matter of like, how much can you create? I think once you scale the team, it's way easier to do that. It's such a fascinating idea of like creating the echo chamber, but it's really a sum, not a, you're not like robbing the compounding. That I had not thought of it that way. That's really smart.
Yeah. And the hard part is like, I've been trying to do that. My biggest challenge, the thing that's just the worst for me inside creating content is I love to spend money. And so yeah. I have all this income coming in and I'm like, I live a far too ridiculous lifestyle when all that money should be going back into like scaling all these things. And I realize like every day how those choices like negatively impact the growth. But here we are.
Yeah, but YOLO. I mean, come on.
Yeah, YOLO. We are YOLOing.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about Valuable too, because you're working on it. You went through these like you said 6 months concepting, 6 months trying to like create the brand, the identity and everything. And now you're like starting to roll it out. It looks sick. You have a bunch of samples, a bunch of different designs, whatever. Talk through like, because one of the little threads that I thought would be fascinating to pull on with you is like, I'm sure you get a lot of people to reach out. Hey, I want to build a brand. Don't know where to start, which is I'm sure your favorite question. and you're like, yo, do some work on that. But like, let's talk about the brand 101 brand building when you have an audience, but let's use Valuable as like the vector for it. Cause you basically did it. Walk me through like in detail the steps and the order you did it and the process.
Yeah. And so I guess really I did a lot of it in the background without talking about any of it. And then I only started talking about it when I was like, everything is almost in reverse. Like I'm posting things not as they happen. I'm posting them like a month or so later because I'm trying to, the narrative of building a brand is so long. Sampling is so long. Everything is so long. If you do it in real time, it's going to be from you showing a concept to when someone can actually buy it is going to be like 9 months, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to avoid that by compressing it. But really, I'm following the like tease. Like all I'm doing now is teasing. There's a couple links to a wait list. There's like a website with a sign up form, and I have some stuff I'm doing. And then it's going to go into process, which is just like, here's all the content like behind why I did this. And that like ties really well into launch. But the way I've been thinking a lot about it is I don't want to do it like a drop. Brand, like where it's like, hey, this month I released these six things. I want to do it as kind of like a perpetual drop brand where it's like just built into the content. So every week I have a content strategy. So as most people do, where I'm like, I do a couple of these videos, a couple of those videos. And I'm just going to basically build that into it where like every week I'm talking about the one or two new things I'm going to have available for sale that week. And whenever I have them, I'm just rolling them out. That's how I'm thinking about doing it, is I'm thinking about being like a completely organic flow, ignore all traditional brand or collection strategy, and just make as many things as I'm interested in, document them as they come, and just kind of let it fly versus having that structure. And that's an experiment I'm doing. I can always kind of lean back into, I'm going to do one really concrete drop. But that's the way I'm looking at it, is like build it in as a content pillar and then just have it like a constant flow of like, oh, this thing I saw 4 weeks ago is here now and there's two more videos on it. And it's just like a perpetual part of the cycle. But, we'll see if it works.
Yeah, I feel like a fascinating variable to play with is the drop mechanic. So it's been the one that we all know, like you said, drops coming. Either you don't know when it's coming or you do know when it's coming. It comes, there's a point in time, sells out, whatever. Actually, as you were saying that, I thought of an interesting idea I haven't seen anyone do. Like, what if you did a drop, but the drops released automatically when certain content had certain engagement? So like you made a video on the hoodie and you're like, as soon as this hits 1 million views, it's getting dropped. It's triggered, coded into the background. I can't control it. So if it happens at 1 a.m., if it happens at 10 a.m., I'm letting it fly. That'd be so sick, right? Because then that's like a reinforcement loop.
No, I think that's fucking fire. And then they have like thresholds and timers and stuff. I love that idea. I think that's fire.
Yeah, take that, run with that. That's pretty sweet. I think what's so cool is like, and this is, I'm 12 months and one fifth the speed, 12 months back and one fifth the speed with Weekends is what you're doing. But I'm trying to think like, how can I create Weekends as this like foundational layer where I can just like play with shit. Like, come out with a hoodie, no one's ever seen it before, make a video, you know, do some shit like the drop mechanics I just said, release it, there's only 50, move on. Like, just things that are the anti of what a big corporate brand that you have to win with could do. Yeah. Just the complete opposite.
The economics are there. Well, I think, and here's what's funny is actually, and there's a couple other elements to your previous question this could tap into too, but I think that's how a lot of companies do it now. You'll see people that drop all the time, like Represent drops like every week. Kith yeah. drops obviously has the weekly. A lot of those companies are doing less individual items than I think you think, but there's so many drops, it doesn't matter. Like a lot of people I feel like are doing 50 or 100 of a thing. It's like not uncommon at all. And it can work inside your logistics. It's just really like the design and production. It's just having the operations going that you can constantly do that. That's the strength of like the background I have is I have probably 70 products in motion right now, and they're all in motion and they're at various stages. And because I know how to run it like productized, and I have designers that work full time, and like I put the onus on the factories I work with to operate within a structure I have, and it's all in Notion and shit. And so I want to be able to do that exact thing. And I think that's actually the model. I think that's what most people are kind of doing. And it's just a matter of what kind of scale can you get to, how fast, and how can you tie your content into match. But that's the fun part, right? It's like, cool, I want to try leather dice for your car. I can make 50 of them, validate it. I'm doing a bunch of that because it's interesting and cool, and I think builds the brand well. But what I'm really focused on from a product perspective is I have 5 or 6 ideas that I think I'm trying to validate product market fit for scale. I'm trying to say, if I drop this, is there the potential for this to be the thousands of units thing? Because I'm always going to make the fun stuff I do just because I want to do it and make content about it. And it's interesting to me. But like, I have a few things I'm doing, like a couple of the bags products I have. I actually have a health and wellness product I'm doing with Landforce, and a few of the shoes products that I'm doing where I'm like, hey, I actually think this has scale. And so then it's a more interesting test. I'm ordering more quantity. I'm like starting with 500 units instead of like 100 units type thing. And I'm really seeing like, okay, is there legs there that go beyond just me making content about it? I'm testing meta ads and stuff like at the same time. And then just basically being like, what are my parameters for success? Like, okay, if I can get my customer acquisition cost at X, and if I sell this many through organic video X, then I'm going to go triple down and I'm going to order 5,000 and try to build a business based around that. And I realize of the 6 or so shots I plan to take in the next 18 months on product market fit, if one works, it's gonna be fucking magic. If like yeah. 3 work, it's gonna be legendary. And I'm definitely thinking about things like that and like have those products like in a separate category.
The thing that's fascinating to me is most brands, and correct me if you think this is the wrong framework, but most brands were like make product and then the content lagged the brand and product, where they're like, okay, I'm gonna use content to grow it. But like the idea for the seed was the product. Now we're seeing like what you and I and a bunch of these people are trying to do, where it's like the content led and the audience was there, and then you're trying to like build the brand and product lagging off the content. And this, I feel like the cycle with content first, it's so much tighter. Like you get way more feedback. Like I can just make one of one hat, wear it, see if people respond. If I get 50 comments that are like, yo, that hat is sick, drop it, then I drop it. Versus like Kith never had that, right? Because they were just guessing at the beginning.
Yep. That's why it's such a blessing to be able to do this now with audience. Like it's such a complete hack. Like I get 1,000 responses to a story survey anytime. I do it all the time. And I'm just you like this leather? You know, like you think this brand's up or this brand's down? And so the fact that we can contribute to that, and to your point, like the comments, like I've noticed that too. I post a lot of samples on stories. The ones where people, I have like 6 DMs being like, I need that immediately, versus the ones where I'm like, oh, I thought this was tight, but no one commented, like impacts how I order things, like for sure. And the fact that we can just unlimited do that is truly amazing. And then something I talk about, a lot of creators hit me like, my brand's not working. And this is the funniest one to me. And I have this conversation probably twice a week with like major creators with brands. And they'll be like, well, I put this thing out and it doesn't sell. And I'm like, well, how many videos did you make about it? And I'm like, and they'll be like, oh, you know, 2, 3. I'm like, have you considered making more videos until it all sells? And like, that's really like the last chain, right? Is like, cool, if I have 60 of a thing sitting or 600 of a thing sitting, it's really just a factor of how many do I sell per video. If I have to go make 100 more videos about that, that's the worst case scenario of how I move through that 600 product. And people just feel like, oh, I did it and it didn't sell. And it's like, this is our toolkit. This is our blessing, is we can put out unlimited content into the lengths of time, as long as it's interesting and engaging, and sell whatever we have, even if it's one unit at a time. And I think that's where it's like, I feel like it's so hard to fail with that mentality.
It's a cheat code. It really is a cheat code. Oh, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this idea. So did you ever play in like Web3 crypto or not really?
I'm like tangentially familiar, but like not all the way in.
So I had this wild idea that I thought would be sick, but the TAM is probably too small. But so I called it drop slots. So the idea was like, when Supreme or Kith, they drop, basically what happened, if it's like a super hotly contested drop, it effectively gets botted. This is what happened with all the sneakers and like the Supreme drops or whatever. And the bots come in, they buy the shit, it goes to eBay, resell for markup, et cetera. The true fans, maybe you get one, but most of them don't. So I was like, what if you could use NFTs, if you're Kith, use NFTs to sell a subscription for the right to buy in every drop. And let's say Kith has 12 drops a year. And if you want to buy and drop one, you're like one of the first ones in because you own the subscription. But if you don't want to drop in one, you can sell that NFT for that drop for some value. And so you're creating like an asset class out of nothing, like the right to buy. Kith wins.
Yeah,
because
I think that's actually a great idea. Yeah.
So I was like, you could build a whole SaaS around that. Kith wins because they get subscription revenue they didn't have before. And now their true fans get to buy. The fan wins because they get to buy what they want to buy and they make revenue off what they don't want to buy. And the bots get bought, like get removed.
Yeah.
And
as long as you like hook up the OGs, if you're like, okay, I'm gonna take all of my early customers or I'm gonna take these four fans and I'm gonna like give you some for free or whatever. I honestly think it's a brilliant idea. I had a more analog idea for getting around some of this. But I love the idea, but it's not tradable. I love that. I think that's a good thing that brands should lean into and you should build the framework for. The hardest part is having anything with NFT on the name of it. If you were just like, token
access
now,
pass.
It's just like, yeah, exactly. Like literally just call it something fucking else and it's a SaaS and it will be brilliant. Hard part is the crypto connotation, but it's funny. So the idea I had, which I know I'm going to say on this and then someone's probably going to do before I get the chance to launch it, but like such is the internet, is I was going to do it. So everyone who gets the valuable tattoo gets the fucking initial passes to the drop. And so like, no matter what, if you want something, you get it. And then like, and I don't know if I was just going to do like first 100 or just let that go into perpetuity.
That's fine.
But like that's going to smash and then have all the designs available, like in like tattoo format and like, yeah, we'll send it to your artist or whatever. But I think, and then have that also like come with a discount or something as well. But, that I think is that was my, like my analog workaround. It's like, cool. Like, you send the video of the tattoo, like the world's your oyster.
The permanent billboard is the fan with the tattoo. That's so funny.
People take that. So we did that at one of the brands I worked with. We had like a cult brand and we would do parties and we started having tattoo artists come and do flash with like the brand iconography. And I remember we were getting bought by a very corporate public company at the time. And they came to these events and were like, people are just getting like the logo tattooed on them. And I'm like, yeah, like people take this super seriously. And their minds were blown because it would be like, there's like 100 kids doing it. And you're like, and I, that also resonated with me where I was like, oh, like this is, I don't know. I have a lot of bad tattoos. I'll easily fucking get more. Like, you know, it just, then there's something about that that I think is people underestimate the power of that and like what people will go to. And if you have a cult brand, like what that can look like.
That's hilarious. That is the ultimate fandom. Like past super fan is like got tattooed. That's if you get tattooed, you're the true OG. Another question on this thread is like, people talk a lot about the physical brands, shitty business model, shitty margins. And honestly, the only thing preventing me from only building physicals is I'm like, well, I can make 95% profit with software and 20% profit with physicals or whatever it is. Yeah. Do you believe that's true to an extent or are people misstating?
To an extent. But I guess I was, you know, as someone, I have been a partner in an engineering agency for like 6 or 7 years now. And so, and I completely agreed in that. We do hardware and software, mostly hardware. And had a lot of conversations about this. But then it was one of those where since the beginning of, I'm not a big AI talker, but since the beginning of AI, once we surveyed the office, how many people are using ChatGPT? This was like week 2 in their code, in their work. And it was fucking everyone. And we were like, oh, okay. Then we started looking at like where we're at now with like Devin releasing in the prior week and stuff. And I'm like, okay. Software is, and this has happened even prior, like is so innately clonable. And it's only going to get worse. And so my basic look on that is like, you will then have to work marketing for like, the reason I get paid the big bucks in brand influencing is because it's really hard to sell software to people. And there's only so many audiences to make that available and can do it in an entertaining way. It's not like a shitty ad. And so I think that like, it's already so hard to get to your audiences like that. And that like, if you're a creator with a big audience, it might work, but yeah, people are going to duplicate your product. They're going to duplicate it for less. They're going to do that with free code. And it's really hard to market and reach your audiences in there. And it wasn't for decades. And people are still looking at those decades of ultra profitability as the model. And I look forward and I go like, the last thing I would do would be encouraging my kid to be like a software engineer.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I do think that while physical, it will always be there. Right. And people, especially consumables, people will always buy food. People will like, lifestyle is the one where it's like the biggest risk, right? Where it's like, all right, well, this isn't cool next season, or people stop having disposable income. But that's where I feel like building something physical is the thing where you can at least build that moat.
Yeah, I agree. There's something about, especially clothing, like clothing is a uniform. And like if somebody's buying software, they're not putting that, unless they're getting the tattoo, they're not putting a software on their head or on their chest and walking around and like promoting it for you versus clothing especially, but even like any hardware, physical good that's on somebody, it just has this like innate property that built into the form factor is broadcastability. Like it is marketability, which I don't know. I feel like that doesn't get a lot of, it doesn't get a lot of embedded value.
Clothing stuff. Clothing is one of the toughest. I really didn't want to make clothing. And I'm doing it. And I see like a product market fit option in the aesthetic that I'm doing that I'm like, that's the only reason why I kind of leaned into it, just because it's ultra competitive. It's so fucking complicated. But to your point, there is that plus side. If you do get that momentum and enough people see it, you can really move. But man, it is a hard niche.
What physical or hardware category do you think is untapped right now?
I don't know about untapped, but I think, consumer electronics is always one where like the barrier to entry is hard. Just being able to be like, oh, this has a wire, or this has a PCB, or like is something that so many people can't achieve, but it's actually very straightforward that I think that there's so much opportunity there. Toys is the biggest one. I work in toys in the daytime and have a lot of people come around with ideas for toys, and also shop for, I have a child who's seven, and I'm just like, man, this is just ripe for, there's just like, these experiences are not modern. These brands, these older big toy companies are not thinking in the right ways. And there's just a million options within that. The other one I love is candy. It's just another where I look at where like everyone, there's either your core candy or your healthy alternative, but there's no more just like, we're making something amazing and boutique. And I think I saw the guy from Mini Katana was just doing like a freeze-dried candy brand, which I was like, exactly, freeze-dried Skittles, run it. Like there's a lot of opportunities I see around here. Even more health and wellness products. Like I'm working on one with Landforest, but it's just like, how do you take any product that people normally use and just make the organic or super high quality version of it? You can see that at Erewhon, where you go in there and it's like protein, Centenarius protein, it's $10 more, it's the best thing you've ever had. It's, you know, hand filtered from Japan. Like there's just so many, I actually feel like there's just 100 physical market opportunities.
Yeah, just go up quality. I feel like up quality is working, will always work, works really well in that. I think with the growth of social media and being able to storytell through video equivalently, like it's not as though me and you have to pay 10 times more to make a video about a high quality product than not. High quality is just where it's at, because you have free CAC forever, higher profit, higher ticket price, and also a better people consumer want quality. Experience. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like, exactly.
Yeah, and so and especially in supplements and stuff like that, I think that's where the biggest one is. Like I take Shilajit every day. I take this based Shilajit, not to like, this is an unpaid promo. And like, look, that dude like went and found the purest stuff at the fucking mountaintop that he could, and he sells a shit ton of it. And like, and that's the difference, is like, literally there's a bunch of those brands out there and his is the best. And he tells the story about it being the best, and you have it and it is the best. And I don't even know what it costs versus the competition. I'm just getting it, you know?
What is on the edge, like I say on the edges, but like whether it's from a content perspective or a brand perspective, who or what is on the edges right now that like, as you go down these rabbit holes and experiment, because I know you're deep in the forums and you're like deep in Discords and you're looking around and you're like seeing shit, you're always sensing, what on the edges that hasn't really grabbed on is intriguing you right now? Could be anything, but just like a thread to pull.
I think some of the stuff that we're seeing or partially involved in, or even like your boy who did the podcast with, like the storytelling and filmmaking for Instagram and TikTok, I think is still just like one of those where you're like, how is this not 10 times the size? Like, why are we not running animes and fucking 1,000 episode series on Reels and stuff like that? The in real life gaming still is like
Pokemon Go.
Yeah, exactly. But with hardware, like there's like those things like that I think are super interesting. Customization is another one of those where I keep seeing around the fringes where like everyone, this is a more of a macro level topic, but like everyone owns so much stuff, right? We're more consuming more than ever. Everyone has way more, the average person probably has way more bags, shirts, hats, whatever than they did prior pre-pandemic. And I think at some point, you know, there's consumer guilt, but also the dopamine of consumer purchase. And so I do think there's just some huge thing around like, how do I modify or enhance the things I already have, becoming like a cultural moment? And it's one of those things I'm kind of surprised hasn't happened already. And maybe it's years down the line, but like, I think will be a major thing that like someone can think about creatively. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? What's in your back pocket?
I feel like there's the content formats on short form. There's so much room to run. Like I think I try so hard to not have the view of like, take something that I see that I like that someone else did and then make it better. That's like iterative improvement. But what I want is like exponential improvement, which is it's going to come from a completely different place. So sometimes I come across these things that are so weird. Like there's this guy, Kyle Short Films. I don't know if that's exactly his handle, but something like that, where he basically creates these like paper cutout characters and then scans them into Photoshop or to Premiere and like makes videos in a completely different way than I've ever seen. And I came across him on the home feed and I was just like, damn, that is like a, like, is he hugely popular, millions of followers? No, but he's like a category of one. What I always say, one of one. That's like a thing I say nonstop. And I'm just trying to find like things like that. So I think on the edges, storytelling has gotten very boring. Like on these platforms, it's the same shit over and over. Every time I scroll, I like watch five videos and get off. Cause I'm just like, this isn't, it's not stimulating.
Have you seen Alexis Bitar?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So check it out. This is a like legacy fashion jewelry brand in New York. You have to check it out. They shifted all their content to be a like vignette based cinematic storytelling about a series of characters in New York that don't exist, that like happen to be wearing their jewelry or whatever, that is amazingly scripted and executed and has like a cult following. And all the videos get like hundreds of thousands of views and is purely entertaining. And I was basically like, there is no, with that format, there is just no shortage of opportunity for individuals or brands or storytellers to kind of execute like in a relatively low budget by just putting out interesting stories. And the way that you consume and the way that we're shown content, like you can be so engaged or pop in and out of the story. And the way I like it is because it's all vignette based. Like every single thing is one part of an overarching story, but you can watch any of them without context. And I was like, oh, there's just like genius entertainment here. And between that and YouTube content, I was just like, what episodic, how is any television, Netflix, anything ever going to compete with what can happen with these wide immersive worlds? I even look at reality TV. My wife worked with Bravo for a while. And so we're really in reality TV culture. But I look at like what Tart is doing, like with Tart Island, like on TikTok, where they have like 20 influencers there. There's all these like reaction videos and these people are hating and this commentary, which is literally just what happens on E! News or Watch What Happens Live on Bravo. And they're doing it in real time at scale that they don't even have to pay for. They're just like enabling. And I'm like, man, the 10X version of that, of like a brand executing on it and like what those dramas and things look like is so much more entertaining and immersive than anything you'll ever see on TV. And I was like, oh, there's a very interesting shift coming.
That's where I think it's going is we're basically going to have like the Christopher Nolans that drop some crazy long form shit. That's like a, it's like an iconic countrywide event once in a while, like every 6 months, like a Dune. Dune. Exactly. Like Dune comes out. Everybody sees Dune. They like take two hours off their phone. They're like, this is what real cinema looks like. And then every other minute is going to be like short form crack cocaine, live, like reality TV style, like the type of stuff that people watch on Netflix, like the, Too Hot to Handle, like that type of shit, but like more accustomed to short form. It's going to gobble up everything. I feel like maybe sports and Dune is the only thing.
Yeah. Like I feel like the interactive element's so interesting. You see those stuff like I don't know if you've seen Battle of the Branches on TikTok where it's like Marines and the Army, like crumping against each other and shit, but you're just like, there is like the way, if you take those combinations of like the way people will just engage and create their own narrative and create their own engagement and like battles or whatever it is, and then you apply that to an existing storyline or thing that's happening like online in the culture that, and then like a hardware or physical component, there is just so many, I think we're gonna have this like very immersive oddball culture that we're headed into that is very intriguing.
The other thing I'm super fascinated by is what is the future, like at the broadest level purchase, but at narrower, like what's the future retail experience look like with augmented virtual reality? Like I've always been fascinated by this concept of like, I don't think the hardware's there yet. I had the Vision Pro, I tried it. It was like mind blowing to put it on, but like the app ecosystem is going to take a while. So maybe like 3 to 5 years from now, but what does it look like when you are in a visual virtual experience and I go to like the Valuable Studios pop-up and I can like interact, like what does interacting with your shit in 3D space look like from my home? That I'm so fascinated by that. And I've been pulling on that thread for a long time. Like I'm not a developer, I'm not a 3D graphic artist. So like, I don't have a good sense for when it's going to be realized, but there will be some scenario where like, cause if you think about it, the e-com shopping experience is pretty terrible, right? Like 2D, scroll through a static feed, you rely on the picture, how good the pictures are to know, but you have no fit concept, you have no texture concept. So I think all that's going to change. I'm pretty fascinated by that.
Well, I think it's interesting because like for Valuable, we were looking at using like an open source library to create like a low res racing game as part of one of the website engagement things, just like a little like fun little Easter egg. And I think that's exactly like that pop-up is like, cool. You come to your e-commerce experiences, you come to the car shop or whatever that is. And like you see these things on display and these new models are in there. And like, I think that's a really fascinating thing. And it gives you that sense of like why the real retail things are succeeding is what you're experiencing there. Cause like, it's so funny. People will bash on Erewhon all the time or like talk about it. And like people don't understand the power, like why Erewhon is so good and why that works so well for retail, which is really that like when you go to that experience, they always have a reason for you to come. there's like a new smoothie and it's gonna be fucking amazing and it's gonna look good on social media and you wanna have it and people around you wanna have it and people that are coming in there wanna go visit it. Everything in there is exceptional. The food you'll go eat is great. And then the discovery is huge. There's always a million new things. You can just wander around there. Now you'll walk in there and you'll be like, oh, like there's just people, there's just girls who are like fucking on mushrooms being like, well, drinks, you know, like he'll be in there for an hour. Right. And like, and so you have this huge discovery platform. That's amazing. That's all like highly, highly curated. You have a reason to go and attend. And then the people watching and the event that it is like, feels like a moment at any time that you're there. And the fact that like not every, you don't even get that at like Dover Street Market or like any of these other, like the places that are the kind of, you feel like will be a center of their own, you know, cultural experience. And the fact that like retail hasn't latched on to that Erewhon model, like is always still bizarre to me that people just think it's something that it's not when reality is just this amazing experience. And then to be able to have that same thing of like, what gives you that same experience? Like virtually, how do you have that discovery element? How do you have that I have to be there element and my friends want to be there with me too. And then like when you're actually there, you're getting to experience and see all these things and people that you aren't anywhere else. I think it's like almost low hanging fruit. Like I feel like you could actually make that interesting environment like relatively easily. It just requires that constant attention to keep updating it, making it exciting enough to come back.
Well, this is the thing, right? Is like the magic formula, the magic pill is can you make a product that people want to photograph and post on stories? Like if you crack that, you win. So like Erewhon, the smoothies, it's a status symbol to post that you got one, not even because of the money, but like because it's limited, you can't get it everywhere, like it's new, whatever. Like the Hailey Bieber smoothie, everybody wanted to post that. It's the same thing as like Spotify Wrapped. Everybody wanted to post their Spotify Wrapped. That creates a viral loop. Siegelman Sable hat. Everybody was like, oh, sick. This is a nobody does horse racing and I did it. Like I wear the hat and I was like, damn, this is sick. I post on the stories. It's like, how do you create? So I'm constantly thinking like from a product and brand perspective, how do you go from nothing? Like assume valuable is basically nothing today. Like you have samples, but you have like no brand equity. How do you create the valuable logo, the valuable hoodie, the drawstring bag into something that people, it's a status symbol to post on stories. Like how would you think about that?
Yeah. It's like, well, that's literally what we're working on where it's just like, A, it's one thing that always works and I always think a lot of is how do you take an existing thing and then change its material or form factor to be something else? So for instance, I'm doing the fuzzy car dice, but we're doing it in leather. And it's just like, okay, it's something you've seen before, but then something about it's elevated. And that's not the most viral thing, but certainly like something headed towards there. But a lot of it is like, who carries it and what that iconography looks like? And does it immediately appeal to you as sick? And then what does it signal? Is a big part of it. Like the Siegelman Stable is a perfect example of like, this is a signaler to like horse girls and like certain type of dude that knows like that there's like a thing happening. And you see that all the time in, you know, types of camo in like in the South. We're like, oh, that guy's wearing Kryptek. Like, you know, it's like there's a couple of these things that like really signal, but at least in the way I'm thinking about it, a lot comes down to material. It's like, how do you take a normal thing and make it stand out? Like even with the basic shirts we're doing, I'm like, the shirts I'm making are so thick and heavy, they're almost unwearable. And they look and they're like, and it's like apparent when you see it, you're like, it's a thing. And so it's just like, how do you just have that extra experience? But something I was just talking with a friend about this morning, he's making some candy and I won't reveal too much of it, but he's putting it in a Coke can, like a tab. And it's just like, what is that filmable thing? Like, it's just the presentation or material of it is by far the easiest one to do. But then everything else comes down to who is presenting it and wearing it. And that's where we have the unique advantage is like, I can just go through the verify people in my follows and be like, all right, cool. Who are we seeding with something like that? And like, how do we make a moment off of it? But then there's also the recognition of the iconography. Like on Valuable, we worked forever on what the core V would be. And I was like, man, there's a Veja V, there's a fucking V-Loan V. There's too much like that. And we ended up with this one that's like, you know, a very unique form factor. And I wanted it to be like more like a swoosh than it is a V, you know?
Yeah. And it's got like a checkmark meets swoosh meets like, yeah, it looks sick.
It took a minute to get there, but then it's like, okay, how do you make that a thing? And then like, without overbranding or underbranding? And it's just it's a constant kind of game of experimentation, but it really comes down to like, how do you showcase that in a way? Like we're doing these shoe bags where like, that's really big on it. And like, that's the only thing it's going to be really big on. And it's just like, all right, if we can have a moment with those where like, that's a product we think has product market fit, the branding is a super core part of it. Okay, if that works, then that logo can now be a thing. You know, but it's like, you kind of have to keep taking these shots on goal.
I've got a sick idea for you and I'm going to tell you what it is. And then I want to get back to the naming idea, like how you come up with names. Cause I think that's really important. Okay. Here's my idea. So, and I guess they're kind of connected. The reason Valuable so far as a name is cause any name that has embedded in it, the meaning or like an emotion is fire. So Valuable, as soon as you see it, you're like, that's valuable. So what you guys should do, to me, this is a home run idea. Hopefully you think so too. What you guys should do is build structural things that people put their valuable shit on that say valuable. So like, for example, if you're a sneaker collector and you own a bunch of rare sneakers, you should build a sneaker tower that says that it's branded valuable, that they put their valuable sneakers on. Or like for the kitchen, you create like little ramekins that like people put their valuable spices or their knives. Like if you're the housing, you can also make stuff that's not the housing, like that is the actual item. But like that is so dope to walk in someone's house, you have sneakers and you put your shoes on a mat that says valuable. And it's like, yeah, I know that shit's valuable. Like that, to me, that's a really dope concept. And like only you can do it.
Well, I think that's actually very close to how we came up with this is, you know, it's one of those things I hate doing things, even though I do corny things. It's always hard saying corny things that you do out loud, but it's like really, when I was looking for inspiration for this brand, I'm reading all the Virgil Abloh books, right? And really look up to and aspire to a lot of the things that he was able to do, especially the portion of it where he was giving so much back, right? And like releasing so much free game. And the, like a lot of the valuable stuff is I was like, okay, if I wanted to have my quotation mark or whatever it is, like it's literally like, it's a space for valuables, right? To your point, like, okay, valuables here or valuables, like it, like that, it's very much akin to the way he labeled things. Is like exactly how we're thinking about it. Like, yeah, I completely agree. We actually have one of the first things we're doing is like, you know how Hermes has those like leather little like trays that like snap together and all that. And it literally has that. And it's like, and it says valuables like on the bottom. And it's going to come very much to that concept. I love the idea of taking it to bigger things like carport, you know, like shoe rack, whatever it is. But like, yeah, that's the whole inherent idea. The whole inherent idea behind the name is that anyone who has it on there, they're inherently valuable. Anything that has it on it is inherently valuable. If you then make it a container, it's there. And like, that's where the power of a name is so much. When we actually got to that name after the fucking 400 ideas, it was like, okay, like this is a thing. And like, this is a thing that gives us a ability to again, stamp it on something and then like, and have it then have us like a seal of approval. Like there's a lot that you could work with there.
Yeah. That's why I named the brand Weekends, because there's this embedded positive resonance in the word weekend, even though the meaning that I'm going for is like a derivative of what the actual word weekends mean. When you hear weekends, you immediately think, oh, positive, good. Like I like the weekends, you know, so similar idea. Now I still have to make it graphically look dope or else it's a flop. But I want to talk about the naming piece. Cause I think, I mean, you talked about it a little bit there, but what are some of the other names that like made it to the finals for valuable and like why you ultimately went away from them?
It wasn't as much. So I don't actually think anything ever made it to a final. We threw so many, like there was just kind of an endless array of mid and then that like emerged.
Yeah.
is more like what happened. So it wasn't even one of those, like we took it to the, like the finish. It was really just like time and time and time and time. And then nothing was good. And then that was amazing. And it was like, it's weird. And I feel like a lot of the processes I have are like that. Like we did the same thing with like a brand I have in Arizona with a partner called Tropics, where it was just like idea and idea and idea and idea. Nothing is good. And then like, okay, that's perfect. Yeah. You know, I don't even know how you get there. Like we just do tons of like, I do a lot of like thesaurus, look through books, look through magazines. I buy endless lots off eBay of like, I have hundreds of 70s High Times. I have every Mirage. I have all the Korean B magazines. I have 1,000 Popeyes. I have every Rob Report ever. You know, like I have all these archives where you can just go through and just be like, what are those word synonyms? Has been really effective for me.
Yeah, that's fire. Like I love thinking about names so much. Like I think Zach Pogrob with the obsession shit, he should have a brand called Madman, which I think is like so fire, if which is that like whole dark black aesthetic. So yeah, I'm looking at the list. I think there's one other thing that I wanted to chat through, and like we can hang obviously as long as you have, but if you got to go, all good. Is so you've been helping as like a mentor to a bunch of like our creator friends who are launching brands that I think for the first time. I don't know if it's their first time, but it seems like it is. So like Zach with the bag brand, Brandino with Blanked, and a lot of those are going to be winners. Like I have a feeling that they're just doing the right thing, especially because they have the audience tailwind. But like, if you bubble up and zoom way out and look down at all those ones you're helping, all the people you're helping with those brands, what are some of the themes or like mistakes that you think people approaching this for the first time come in with that you've helped obviously correct and like you can help shortcut them to thinking about things the right way, but like just any insight there?
Yeah, I guess one, a lot of it's operational, being like redundancy on your manufacturing, or hey, this is how you get a secondary freight quote, or like a lot of the stuff that just helps you not like lose money, and like pricing and stuff. Wholesale is another one, like prepping for wholesale and like having line sheets and like doing all that. But the biggest thing I've seen with some of these people is The ones that succeed have a lot of vision, right? They're trying to make something hard and complicated. And that is great and something you definitely want to do and will help you stand out and better. But actually perfectly executing your vision often doesn't come to reality. And I don't think people should be afraid to ship 80%, especially as a creator, and then iterate on it. And like, I'm being the exact example of that, where like all my stuff is almost there, and but we're rolling anyway, and we're going to iterate it better and explain why. I think is such a better format for a creator than anything else. If you're not, don't have like the background on it. Like Brandon with Blank, for instance, he just crushes it. Like his product actually crushes it out because he's 3D designing it. He's going through those processes. He has that expertise. And so he's making amazing product from the start. But I think for anyone that doesn't have his skill set, you would be better off making something that is solid and then improving it and then having that story of that improvement exist than waiting until you have it perfect.
Yeah. What do you think is the best approach for like storytelling through content with because it's something you said before, which I really resonate with, is like the lag time between creating physicals is so significant that if you did real-time document, it would be boring to watch. Like there'd be so many gaps. And so that's for me as someone who's like trying to figure out how do I real-time storytell, trying to build weekends. I'm basically at zero now and I have like a bold vision for what I want it to be. What do you think the best way to do that? Is it the kind of like vlog style shit that like George Heaton is doing with Represent, or is it something else? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think what I think resonates more than like Represent is doing a number of amazing things. I actually think that YouTube doesn't quite hit the mark. Almost everything else they do does. I understand why they're doing it the way they do it though. But like, look, what really matters for those people, like whether it's George and Michael or Dominico from PDF or a few of these guys, they're just constantly sharing the visual images. Like, here's what this is. It's premium. We're working on it. It's coming. Like the picture version of that goes so far of just like, and some of those things never release, right? But it's just like that constant stream of samples and examples and things then matched with lifestyle is just like such an unbeatable velocity, whether that's in carousels or just on stories or whatever it is. And I think in the interim, why I encourage people to ship early and then just iterate is like, it's important to be like, hey, this is my bag. This is V1. Here's what I did. Here's why I love it. And then here's the things I plan to do better for the next time, what I'm thinking about, and then solicit that opinion and then come back to it is, and then having that out there and existing and in the world and people using it and giving them their feedback and then them knowing, because you're asking for it and you're talking about it, that you're willing to have the conversation around how it improves is like such a better basis to build from than waiting for a perfection on a thing you're gonna have to go through that same iteration for anyway. And that's also why I think iconography is so important. And I have this, you know, that meme where it's like, you have like the dumb guy and then you have the overthinker and then you have like the guru.
Midwit meme.
I use this all the time to describe like iconography and like why it works. Is so many, everyone wants to have like blank stuff. They don't want to put their logos on things. And I'm like, yeah, but at the end of the day, if you get a logo that works or you get a piece of iconography that works, like I'm using eagles a lot. And it's like, the meme is like the dumb meme is like, put eagle on bag or like put eagle on t-shirt. And then it's like overthinking like materials, you know, product market fit, you know, no iconography. And at the other side, it's like put eagle on t-shirt. You know, it's like really like that is, if you have a thing that resonates, like, they don't be afraid to embrace. I think people are just doing too much.
Dude, midwit rules the world. I think what you're doing with the Virgil Abloh, like your version of Virgil Abloh, how to build a brand, like across Hyper, you're doing the like 30-day series on Instagram. You're basically built. I think it's so sick what you're doing, because most people don't know about Hyper. Like a lot of people in B2B, I mean, you guys have a good amount of subscribers, but like, I don't think you talk about it that much on like video, but it's so sick where like, if you're into this, what Oren's talking about, go subscribe to Hyper. You can plug the URL for it, because Hyper is basically like in detail walking through like, here's exactly what you do, here are the factories you go to, here's the process to do it. Like, it's so much more data rich than the video, which the video is still helpful too. And then the most data rich is what you're doing with Valuable. You're using the knowledge you have to actually show an example. So I think that combination is fire.
Yeah, and that's like, and I was just like, how do we cover all these bases, right, in a way that makes sense and they all play into each other? But like, you can't give, I mean, we're all stuck in this 60 to 90 second format. And even with YouTube, no one watches the YouTube. 60 to 90 second formats get all these views and you can't work through it. And it's like, you got to put all the information somewhere in the newsletters. The one, also newsletters are competitive now. There's so many people that have newsletters. And it's like, if you want to stand out, it has to be like, I have to open this. There's so much value in it each time. And like, that's the approach we're taking for everything. And now I still have to go execute on the brand, right? And like, that's the hardest part. But if the worst case is, it's just the experiments that are the fun things I want to do, I get to make content about, like, that's still a win. I have much bigger hopes for it, but I also have that, like, all of those things tying together just helps reinforce it. And honestly, it's like the dream thing. It's like exactly what I want to be doing with my time.
Yeah, it's so sick. Well, I know time is of the essence. Definitely plug the links, so like people will find you at Oren Meets World on socials, but like plug the Hyper link also, and plug the Valuables link.
Yeah, hyperstudios.us. We actually just put like a little, we have a little archive on there now. We're trying to make it like a browser tab homepage that just has like our curated list of like factories and inspiration websites and references. So hyperstudios.us and then valuablestudios.com has the sign up list for the stuff we're dropping.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'm hoping that the way we can evolve the podcast is like 15 to 20 like rotational guests to come on like every 3 or 4 months and just like keep updating on the process. So would love to have you in the mix.
Sick. Let's do it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Appreciate it, man. All right. Talk to you later. That's the pod.